Sam Ackerman's with us now from Tauranga. Morena, Sam.
Good morning.
Now, RNZ's been covering the Māori Cup debate, shall we put it that way, long been an issue with just how competitive and professionalised some sports have been getting. But what have you made of RNZ's coverage and the concerns people have?
Yeah, look, Dan Johansson's been bringing a lot of issues to the fore that deserve to be spoken about. And the Māori Cup is something like, for example, I had no idea at all what the Māori Cup was till I got into third form. So what's that, year nine? And when I was at, I went to Auckland Grammar, a big school that cares about things like that. And the Māori Cup was this huge thing that the entire school kind of got indoctrined as being an elite thing, and to have this as prestigious for the school. Now, that was back in the early 90s, so I can only imagine how that's been ramped up as professionalism has hit this. I know I've had family members who row, and they've gone through Māori Cup cycles. It's big, it's full on, it's exciting, it's exhausting, all those things. But certainly when you get to that kind of pinnacle level, and even at lower kind of levels to it, there comes a level of obsession that comes with it from coaches, from schools, from parents, because as the coverage is kind of noted, it is big investment. It's a lot of money to send your kids to do one of these things, and that is part of the barriers for access to some teams and how poaching is allowed to happen. Very similar to rugby, is if you think that you can afford to bring people in to offer them quote unquote scholarships to bring them across to play for your school, it allows players from other schools to be watered down, other schools to not get that effort. So it is a massive topic to bring up, and it's across junior sport, across the grades, you name it. Certainly surf lifesaving in the juniors oceans categories. You're talking about under 11-year-olds being kind of referred to as athletes. It goes right into you're a senior at age 15 in that sport as well. And there's so many in it for the right reasons, and there's some coaches and some sports and some schools that for them and what they'll achieve, this is the pinnacle. So they treat them the same way and put the same expectations on them as these athletes who are performing as paid athletes at the highest level internationally on the biggest sports in the world. So it is, there's a dichotomy that's really hard to break. The toothpaste is out of the tube. How do you dial it back? How do you get it back to a stage where there aren't those pressures on? There's not athletes' welfare being kind of pushed ahead of their overall enjoyment. It's a messy scenario. But I think that the Māori Cup and this coverage has really allowed for that discussion to be back on the table, and it needs to stay there constantly on how you get it back, because I don't have an answer. I can't tell you how you remove barriers to excellence and how you stop a school from wanting to strive to be the best. It's you're going to say well, you're not going to get any high level coaches, no coaches that come from professional backgrounds to join your school. A lot of those coaches are great and will give the kids the right mentality to learn about not just how to be a good athlete, but how to be a good person and dedication. There are so many great things that can come from being part of the Māori Cup, and I'd say 90% of the kids who are down at the Māori Cup now are having a time of their lives and are learning so much, making new friends and experiencing something that'll be, for a lot of them, the pinnacle of their sporting career. But it's the other side that really needs to have the spotlight shone on it. And the concept of year 14s, where people come back just literally after finishing year 13 because they fit in an age barrier to be able to go back in to compete, it certainly has to be addressed. I like the concept of going into year barriers rather than age barriers, and I certainly wouldn't be opposed to lower grades being run through a slightly less competitive structure. But sport needs the spotlight, and it's been great coverage from Dana.
Look, it has. It's interesting, isn't it? You'll get doctors saying kids are overtraining too young. You'll get psychologists saying they're being there's so much pressure being put on them too young. It's a fine line between being your best in an age-appropriate way and then the whole kind of system, if you like, setting itself up or setting a culture up that goes above and beyond that. But it's not an easy line to identify. It's definitely, I can't speak for Māori, I know there's sort of been issues for a time around that because it's an incredibly demanding physical sport, right? You can't just toy with it. But certainly with the likes of rugby, it's become more of an issue just in recent years with the academies and everything else.
And the TV coverage, and you know, these, you know, kids become not stars in the biggest context, but certainly in their world, you know, they're saying, oh, someone was watching you, and wherever they saw you, it suddenly it adds an extra dimension of pressure. Competing for your school's one thing. Competing for your school where everyone in your school can watch it, not to mention everyone around the country and people can tap into watch it around the world. Those are factors for young, you know, young people that have to deal with. It's not an easy thing at all. Professional athletes with, you know, Gilbert and Okers and mental skill coaches struggle with that side of things. So there's so much about it's a sport like rowing. It teaches you dedication. It's fitness. You bond with people as a team. You learn to work together. There's great things come out of that, and it makes leaders. It makes better people who feel more in tune and connected with people. But it also it creates scenarios where some get pushed or where some are told that it's a win at all costs. You can't eliminate that from sport, like you can't eliminate that from business, like you can't eliminate that from community funding. Whatever it is, there's always going to be those elements. But until those, you can't just accept it. You need to make sure it's brought out into sunlight for the most disinfectant it can get.
All right. Now, the New Zealand Basketball League, the plan is to go viral. How so?
Yeah, this is the good kind as well. They have forged a deal with TikTok, where the Wednesday night games of the NBL competition will be streamed globally on TikTok. Now, given that they've got a partnership with Sky, and these things can be hidden behind subscription walls, it's a big deal and a big move in that way. But it's also another sign of showing that Sky's approach to how they use content, own content, is continue to evolve. We've talked before about how there's been the free-to-air rugby and rugby league starting to come in to the play now to make sure there's a growing awareness and a growing brand connection to these sports. And this is a big one for basketball. Now, I'm a sports nut. The NBL is not targeting me. I'm not who they want. The audience is big time. It's 35 and under. And the best way to get there is go to where they are and create scenarios. So the highlight reels and whatnot they put on TikTok are some of their, you know, most viewed aspects of the sport, the platforms that are working best. So it's a smart move. It's a show. It's an organization that's thinking on its feet and is just daring to be different. It's what do our audience need and how do we get them? Where's the best place to grow? So another example of the NBL, they've been changing things up with salary caps and competition structure, new teams as well. So I think they're a really forward-thinking competition. Starts next week, and I think more and more New Zealanders get a chance to access it.
Very good. Now the All Blacks. What was I reading about the coach wanting to bring back Sam Whitelock? Goodness, he's got a bit of grey in his beard already, but it's determined that we need some more from him.
Is this a sign of desperation or just Kenny Razor Robertson coach pre-coaching? Because he's not coaching yet, right? He doesn't have a team. So this is what's a man with a mind like Razor Robertson going to do other than start to get wheels in motion? We know he wants the ability to pick players from overseas. He's dropped that hit with Richie Mo'unga, who's playing in Japan before. But the talk that Sam Whitelock might be invited back and they'd like him to come back into the fold. I mean, he was given grand farewells and the like. It feels like we all got ready to move past it. But if Sam Whitelock makes himself available for the All Blacks, turns down the second year of his French contract, which is his choice to do in his contract, and comes back, I mean, it's an experience plug for a team that has lost a great deal of experience along the line. I'm ready to move on. I think that at this first year of a World Cup cycle, there is enough experience in and around that you can start to build from. But look, you know, we're talking in Mo'unga and Whitelock, two of the trusted leaders that Scott Robertson had at the Crusaders, where they won seven in a row. So he wants to potentially lean to where he knows. I don't think he's saying that the stocks at lock are poor, because there's good options. They just need investment and they need time in the black jersey and in that international saddle. But really intriguing that he keeps kind of leaning on this desire. Part of me wonders, is this because he wants players who can perform right away? Because everyone saw how savage the media and the public was on Ian Foster with any particular drop in pace. Every test when you're an All Black coach is expected to be won. There's none like, okay, well, we understand you're growing. Sure, you can grow, but don't drop a damn game along the way. No, no
Well,
chance. So I'm intrigued.
it's also the expectation that he's going to usher in this new era and he's going to be this breath of fresh air and he's going to have all these innovations. This is probably an indication that he realises he is stepping up a cog well and truly and wants a connection through to the culture, the tactics and the way this particular side works. He may well want to inside Sam Whitelock's head as much as anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Sam Whitelock's rugby ability is huge, but his the mana that he brings in a playing group is second to none. No one could possibly have any more respect for him. He always gives everything. Never's put a foot out of line on the field, off the field, or anything. So, of course, Sam Whitelock says, "Hey, I'm available to play for the All Blacks." You'd say, "Sam Skipper, you are. Yeah, absolutely, you're in. You wouldn't mess with that." So. I love it, and I think that this is also Scott Robertson making sure that the topics he wants discussed stay discussed. We're talking about it now, and I think it works out to be his long-term plan over the next 4 years and hopefully longer.
Well, we talked about the horror start for the Crusaders to this season. 4-0 they are. Hurricanes, meanwhile, have had a blinder of a start. But is that word rotation back after all these years?
Yeah, it is. It's almost come with a kind of a wound
trigger
stutter
warning.
Every time I go to say the word, like rotation. But it's okay now because they've made 13 changes to a starting 15. It should be pointing out they're taking on the Rebels, who they should smoke. Even a quote unquote B team would be able to have a pretty good contest against a Rebel side that's struggling on a lot of fronts, including financial. But think about the people they've brought in as well, and it shows more about the depth of this Hurricane squad. It is formerly Crusaders-like in its depth. Jordy Barrett gets to come back from injury, from a suspension, pardon me. TJ Perenara played 80 tests for the All Blacks. He can bring in to replace Cam Roygaard, who's the gun halfback of the whole comp at the moment, and their captain, Brad Shields, who hasn't played for Super Rugby, but has played 100 games for the Canes. He's a veteran. He's went over and played for England. He's come back. They've all had close to, if not over, 100 Super Games each. So it's not like they're bringing in bunnies. There's still plenty of experience in this team. So I rate it, and I think it's great. And tell you what, a couple of derbies to look out for. The Blues versus the Crusaders. The Blues have only won like one of the last 19 games against the Crusaders. If they can smell blood in the water, they're going to want to make that work. And the Highlanders have been impressing as well. They're kind of punching above their weight. Looking forward to seeing what they can do against the Chiefs.
Now, the Pacifica Rugby Hall of Fame, is there one already or is someone suggesting one?
It's just started up. It's the first inductees have just been announced. And I love the concept because so many rugby players represent Pacifica Rugby without representing Pacific Island teams, and a way of recognising their connection to that community and what they've achieved means to their families as well. I think it's wonderful. The headline, as you'd expect, who's the most famous Pacific Island rugby player of all time, John Olamu, and goes straight in. For me, though, the name that belongs there the most and gets in there as well, Sir Brian Williams. BG's done it all as a player and as a coach, Manu Samoa, as administrator. He's given so much. Fi Fa'amusili, four-time World Cup winner with the Black Ferns as well, an absolute legend. The other names in there, some great names of Island rugby, and Wasili Sirivi, the little master from Fiji Sevens, the great Peter Fats, Peter Fatalofa, Brian Lima from Manu Samoa, George Smith represented the Wallabies, of course, with great aplomb. The name that stands out for me that's missing, Sir Michael Jones. But in fairness, he's the chairman of the Hall of Fame. And could there be a less Sir Michael Jones move in the history of moves if he had named himself?
They'll
as
find
the first
a way.
Inductee?
They'll find a way. Very good.
He will be dragged kicking and streaming eventually. But he'll be there at some stage. But I love the concept. No Tongan player, I think, would have been nice, and perhaps another women's player. But they'll have concepts to bring that in along the line.
Very good. Now, tell me about this Australian cricket boycott, please.
Yeah, this is intriguing. They've again turned down an arranged tour. They've said they're no longer not going to tour Afghanistan, and this is due to the Taliban rule and the lack of rights for women. Now, many people will applaud this stand, of course, both political and ethical. It's now the second time they've cancelled a trip. So it's not to Afghanistan, it's to the United Arab Emirates where they will play these series. The second time they turned it down, and they also rejected having Afghanistan come for a test match in Hobart, you may remember a few years ago as well. So that's consistent, but is it really consistent? Because they didn't stop playing Afghanistan at the Cricket World Cup. That was a recent one. That was the one where Glenn Maxwell needed that incredible double hundred to save them from a would have been an embarrassing loss to Afghanistan. While Afghanistan did great in the tournament, it would have been kind of a real setback for them. They could have said we refused to play that, surrendered the 2 points, and still been okay in that tournament. But they didn't. Probably, not worth pissing off the likes of India over things like that. The BCCI, very powerful. Which leads me to wonder if there was political unrest or something disagreed with India, would they be making the same stance? Would they cancel those trips, those lucrative trips that allow the players to become millionaires through the IPL exposure that brings in a ton of money and broadcast revenue? So it's easy to turn down a tour that no one's particularly interested in going on in the first place in T20 series, but I can understand the standoff. We've seen a lot of issues over, say, the Russian Olympics and tennis players and whatnot with the terrible situation that's been thrust upon the people of Ukraine. So it is a political is always an issue, but to me this seemed a little picky and choosy
Pick and
from the
choose. Yep.
oddities.
Cheers. Thanks, Sam Ackerman.